introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And we are back once again with the full crew. And we're just going to jump right in. QB1, JR, my man, how's it going?
Everything's good, man. You know, we finally got a win last week. I'm excited to hopefully beat up on the Cardinals this week coming up.
I like it. Miles, playing hurt. Little under the weather. Thanks for toughing out being with us here, man. I'm not really going to ask you how's it going, but I guess, you know, you surviving? You making it?
Yeah, I'm coming out. I've been pretty sick for the last couple of days. Kind of like MJ in the playoffs, but, you know.
Hey, that's why you I'm know. Here. A flu game flu for pie. Miles.
Flu pot.
That's what we're going to call this one.
There we go. The flu pot. And last, but certainly not least, Mega Man. What's cracking?
Hey, how y'all doing, man? Just It's Friday Junior, as I like to say, and we almost there at the end of the week.
Friday Junior, huh?
Friday Junior.
And we're going to have an outtake conversation about, you know, you spending too much time in the office. But anyway.
Yo, that was, I'm not even going to say it. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's just jump in. Miles, I'm going to start. Miles and Prince, I'm going to let y'all go first on this one. But what is going on with Jimmy Butler? Miles, I know you're under the weather, but you got to go first on this one because you've been out there on the timeline battling everyone. David, sorry for the basketball talk, but, you know, it's what's in the news right now, and it's topical in Minnesota, so we got to talk about it. What is going on, and why are people so angry?
I think it's just being blown out of proportion, to be in all honesty. Like, this is exactly what Jimmy Butler wanted. Don't ask me why, but, like, the fact that Thibs and Glenn Taylor allowed, they like literally knew this was going to happen. Jimmy literally told them, if y'all let me practice, this is what about to happen. And they're like, oh, bet. Okay, that's cool. Whatever. And they let it happen anyways. But like for me, I'm on my side of things. I'm not saying I'm all on Jimmy's side here. I'm just saying I believe that there's more to it than that. Like, Jimmy wants to be great. Jimmy wants the players around him to be great because he's got guys around him that have the potential to be great. He wants more out of them. He wants to win. I know his resume. I know everybody's using the, well, what has he done to deserve that? Well, he's trying to be a part of that, right? Like, he's trying to be a part of a winning team. He wants to be a part of a winning program. So, and he's got two guys in Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins who, all intents and purposes, I'm not going to say Cat's underperformed because Cat's a baller, but like on the defensive side of the ball, Cat's been a liability straight up. And we know last year when Jimmy Butler got there, Andrew Wiggins decided to kind of go into his shell and be like, oh, I'm not going to play third fiddle, yada, yada. So he kind of backed down a little bit. But I feel like Jimmy's just trying to make sure that these young pups, they step up because the level that Jimmy's at, neither of them are really playing at right now, and that's the issue I think he has is he's just saying, y'all need to step your game up because we have a squad here that could do something, but if y'all aren't willing to do it, then we're not going to get to that point. So then why am I going to waste my time here? That's my biggest issue with it. I'm not saying Jimmy's handling it in the best manner because I don't think he is, but at the end of the day, I think the front office in Minnesota and Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins need to be held responsible for some of the stuff that's going on too. So that's my biggest gripe with everything.
Yeah. So Miles, obviously again, like I said, you very much have been kind of in there mixing it up on this one. I've been very much on the outside kind of just seeing what's been going on, but not really as deep into it. What are the counter arguments? Cause what, I mean, obviously it's messy, but I mean, a lot of the things that happen with the NBA in the offseason are super messy. So that's part of what makes their offseason probably the best offseason in sports is that it's just all of this stuff. The stars actually have power. They kind of run things. They're out there. They're on social media.
Right.
They drop all these things for us. So it makes it, you know, where you can kind of follow along with all this stuff. It's not as cloak and dagger as the NFL. But when you boil down the argument of what you are saying, Those are arguments that I've seen from many of the people who I now think are arguing with you on Twitter in terms of, you know, Cat needing to play more defense, or Wiggins needing to play angry, or why can't we get the Wiggins who plays against the Cavaliers every night, and those sorts of things. Like, I've seen fans make all of those arguments on Twitter, and many of the people I think have even seen who are kind of coming at you about it. I guess where I'm confused is what are you hearing back in these arguments from people that has them so upset about the fact that, you know, Jimmy Butler saying these things?
In all honesty, I can't speak for everybody. It really does seem like they're just, what I've learned, fans don't like when a player doesn't want to be on their team, on their hometown team, right? Like in this instance, Jimmy Butler doesn't want to be in Minnesota. So it's really easy for fans to be like, oh, well, if he doesn't want to be here, screw him. Whatever he does, screw him, like, get rid of him. He's not, like, all the negative stuff starts coming out. Like, he wasn't worth the trade, yada, yada. Like, he really isn't all that good. He's injury prone. All that stuff really comes out now because that's the side of it. Because Jimmy said, he came out and said, well, I don't like the way everything's going with my relationship with Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. So I don't want to be here anymore. I'm not going to sign long term here. I feel like that's, fans just decide, well, all right, then screw it. You know, we don't like this guy anyways. Like he's not worth it. I'm not saying Jimmy's handling it the right way, but like where fans, I think, are really missing the point is in the NBA. And we haven't seen this since like a Kevin Garnett in Minnesota and Kevin Love, in a sense, is like NBA players. Like you said earlier, Jason, they have a lot of majority. They have all the power, right? They have fully guaranteed contracts. Like there's a lot of player options that happen in contracts. There's a lot of no trade clauses, whatever there is. The way the CBA is for the NBA, they give the players a majority of the power. So when you give these guys the power and you have a guy of Jimmy's level, who's arguably a top 10, top 12 player when he's healthy on both sides, like it's really hard not to.
That feels like we're stretching a little bit. I mean, he's good, but
I mean, that's fine. I mean, you could whatever you want, like top 12 to 15, whatever. But like in terms of a two-way player, he's arguably one of the better players in the league, right? Like on both ends of the court.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But anyways, I think the biggest part is that like fans just really struggle when players have the power, because he's basically saying, I don't want to be here. I have the power, and I can tell you that I don't want to be here. And y'all pretty much have to grant it, right?
So hateration.
Yeah, but like, I just think fans aren't used to seeing it. So like, when they start seeing it, they don't like it because it just looks so negative. But like I said, I don't think he's handling everything the right way. But like, this is what the NBA is about. Like, they're handing their players this power. Like LeBron James, like I'm not comparing Jimmy to LeBron, but like. LeBron's literally done anything he's wanted for the majority of his career, right? Like, that's because the CBA has allowed them to do that. So Jimmy's going to take advantage of it every chance he can.
As well he should.
Right.
Get yours. It's the game. I guess we'll bring this thing home a little bit more quickly here, because, you know, folks are going to be yelling at me tomorrow about all this basketball stuff. JR, obviously, I know you are a basketball junkie. What are your thoughts on this? Rapid fire on it. And Princeton, you can bring us home.
It's just an odd situation, man. Like, Jimmy obviously expressed to Tibbs that he didn't want to be there, so I think they should have got rid of him then. But, I mean, he flew. Tibbs and Glenn Taylor flew all the way out to Cali just for Jimmy Butler to tell him that he didn't want to be there no more. So that should have been the final straw with them. And I know Tibbs tried to mend the relationship because they have history back in Chicago, but Jimmy just doesn't want to be there. He just doesn't like being in Minnesota. He doesn't like what's going on there, and he just wants to be somewhere where he can be that main option guy. That's why he said he wanted to go to the Nets or the Clippers, I believe it was, or the Knicks. So Jimmy doesn't really care about winning. That's how the vibe I've always got from Jimmy Butler. He just wants to be that marquee guy, and it's just a messy situation right now. And it's a tricky situation, too, because the whole issue I have with Jimmy and what he did was, where was this last year? Why are you just now saying all this stuff? And, I mean, it's just fishy that Rachel Nichols was in town when he did all this, and that makes me think that it was set up. And I do think it was set up for him to do this rant. So I don't believe what he's saying right now. And
well, he was doing this during practice last year, right? like the only thing we he couldn't really fully do it because it was his first year in Minnesota, but during practice he was pushing these guys to be better, to do more, right?
I don't remember him being like this outspoken about it. Maybe just because it wasn't on camera.
We've seen it during games, the way he, every time Andrew Wiggins was coming off the court or anything like that, like Jimmy was always in his ear. Like we've seen it, we've heard about it. But like you said, it wasn't to this extent, obviously, but it was out there.
That makes more sense. And, I mean, he has a point about Wiggins and Cat. I'm a fan of both of those guys, but their biggest Achilles heel is killer instinct, and that's been the biggest issue with Cat. He just doesn't have killer instinct. Andrew Wiggins doesn't have killer instinct at all. So I see from that standpoint where Jimmy Butler is trying to go with the situation. I just don't like the way that he handled it as far as going on camera and going with Rachel Nichols and all that stuff. So it's become a real toxic situation at this point, and I'm surprised that they haven't got rid of him at this point.
All right, Saxy Prince, bring us home. Jimmy Butler.
Go. Yeah, I think Miles touched on probably one of the biggest points is it. I think fans just don't like players that have a mind of their own and can say what they want. I think we've talked about it before. NFL is just different than the NBA. NFL players have to be, you know, very choir board like and, you know, very cordial and, you know, really not say anything that's going to like rough up the feathers with the players, the organization, all that other stuff. Whereas in the NBA, guys say what they want. They say how they're feeling about stuff. And I think it's just a different culture that exists within the NBA versus the NFL. Like Miles, I don't think Jimmy's doing everything the right way, but I think there's some aspects of it where it's just like, you know, if you are, you know, a star player on the team and you know you have other guys on the team that can help elevate you, I mean, it must have been really frustrating for Jimmy when he was out for those 20 games to watch the Wolves just barely get into the playoffs. Whereas, you know, they probably could have gotten in there more, you know, more sure-handedly. So, Jimmy obviously wants out, but at the same time, like, I think there is that little bit, that competitor that's in him that's really driving how he's behaving and acting. And I think that we didn't necessarily hear everything that was happening, but I think there was always some, like, you know, whispers and whatnot of Jimmy having problems with, you know, Wiggins and Cat and stuff, and Cat and Jimmy having issues. So, I have much more to say as far as that. I just think that this is absolutely hilarious, and it's the kind of entertainment that I needed for the offseason.
All right. I mean, we in season, though. I mean, we got football. But even still, we got football going on, and, you know, just the messiness of all this, it dominated things. And it was, you know, it's funny. You know, stories of Jimmy taking the third stringers and beating the first team and all that other petty business that, you know, Jimmy and I'm sure his agent are leaking out there to make folks look bad and try to, you know, flex on things. But anyway, we're going to run through this next one pretty quickly here because obviously, Prince, you talked about it on the football machine. But, you know, we have a Matt Nelson, friend of the show. He said he wanted to slap you, Saxy Prince, talking about the Vikings taking a high round pick on wide receiver. I'm going to give you just a quick second to kind of make your argument and or, you know, challenge Matt to a duel so we can get this thing wrapped up, figured out, and moved on to the next thing.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people who want to slap me. So, I mean, that Matt's not really taking a stance that's unique. But I don't know. This has kind of been an ongoing conversation I've tried to have for the last couple of years where I think we have two really stud wide receivers that are, you know, easily tops, both top eight, top seven type wide receivers right now. And they're performing at such a high level. But we oftentimes just like don't ask ourselves a question. What happens if one of these guys goes down for an extended period of time? Really, I think Diggs and Thielen both can, you know, can carry offense, but I don't think for an entire season. And
when you say we, who exactly is it that you're referring to?
We in terms of.
Because, I mean, I feel like, you know, we've been banging the drum fairly loudly for guys like, you know, Galladay last year. Miles, you know, had a fair share of guys that he was telling us maybe we should look at that, you know, made impacts. Like, it seems like fans have kind of been on the train of, yeah, let's add some guys, let's get some quality guys, but maybe let's wait until,
and I think,
you know, middle of the draft.
Yeah, and I think that's what the take was, is that there was an issue that I had said, I'm okay with, you know, spending a higher round pick. If you want to spend a first or second round pick this in 2019, I'm okay with it. If it's that guy that you really can feel that you really feel is that dynamic and can add that much to your offense. And I mean, it gives you a little bit of leverage with Adam Thielen in the event that he has some contract disputes or he, you know, wants to hold out. So, I mean, that's mostly was my take is like, I just think that we need obviously a consistent third, someone who is another explosive weapon, but at the same time to give us some stability in the event that, you know, Diggs gets hurt or, you know, Thielen gets hurt.
Adam Thielen ain't holding out. Let's be real.
Yeah, no. Hometown man. He deserves
more scratch, but he ain't holding out.
Nah, he's gonna get it. We've covered that ad nauseum. That man's gonna get his money. Yo, at the end of the season, they'll move some things around, sweeten it up for him a little bit. But you know, in all contracts, it's all about all negotiations. It's all about leverage. And unfortunately, as much as he is balling out, and he is balling, he has no leverage. Unless he holds out, and that is not his brand, so I don't think that's what's going to go down. All right, thank you for clearing that up, Sexy Prince. You know, speaking of slaps, because you know something that you know did also happen recently, and I know that something that I follow very closely. You know, obviously, you guys know I like to train in the martial arts and all that stuff. But did any of you catch, yes, the lead up to the fight, Conor McGregor? Could be any of the things that happened afterwards, or could be fighting that man's whole team. Anybody? Anyone?
No,
not even a little bit. All right. Well,
I didn't even hear the question, to be honest.
Did you catch the fight over the weekend?
Oh, no. God, no.
I've seen like the post-fight stuff that was going on.
Conor McGregor
getting his ass beat. I'm all for it, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, he got his ass beat. And yeah, I think it's a valuable lesson. It's a valuable lesson that I think that the many people, especially on the Twitter.com, could learn from, in that Conor McGregor was talking a lot of stuff. And he thought everybody was playing, but he didn't know Khabib and them were really about that action. And so midway through the fight, Conor was like, yo, I thought we were just playing. And in the next round, Khabib literally tried to tear his head off his body and then went and tried to beat up everyone that he brought with him to the club. It was fantastic. So let that be a lesson. Don't say things if you aren't prepared to back them up, because the people that you're talking to might not be joking around with you. All right, we'll keep it moving since I'm the only one who watched that one. Not going to be a really good conversation there. Kanye West making headlines, visiting with the man, Donald Trump. Not going to go down too far in this rabbit hole because this is not a political podcast. But I did have a statement that I wanted to get your take on, gentlemen, because this is one of those things where I've seen people kind of jumping in. So there are folks who have a cultural take on Kanye West and how he's behaving. And we'll just say it. Black people not happy with Kanye West. And I'm seeing many non-black people insert themselves into the conversation that black people are having amongst themselves about Kanye West, telling the black people how it is we should feel about what is going on with Kanye West. And I would just like to say, please stop. It's fall. We do this podcast. We've been doing it for a while. You don't hear us telling you how to feel about pumpkin spice or anything of the sort. Some conversations aren't for everybody. You know, sometimes we're going to have a conversation about some stuff. Just let it happen. We have the right to talk about everything, but we don't have to talk about everything. We don't have to share our opinion on everything. So just leave it alone, please. Because, you know, people are teetering very close to lines that, you know, could let them catch a smack or something from some of the things that we're seeing out there. So please stop. Please stop inserting yourself into all that Kanye stuff. Is any of y'all got any comments on Kanye, Trump, anything you want to say?
Kanye West is Kanye West is a musical genius, and that is the only kind of genius that he is.
Is he still
musical? Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I guess, what was the last Kanye album you bought?
I'm not talking about in terms of, like music that I like, but I, like, when you look at, like, how Kanye, like, actually, like, produces his albums and, like, obviously the musical interpretation, the things he's actually doing musically, yeah, he's a musical genius. But again, okay, That's where that geniusness stops.
Okay. All right. That's fair. All right. That's enough of that. Let's move on into some proper football talk. Talk about these Minnesota Vikings. Talk about our team. Like JR mentioned at the beginning, happy days are here again. The Minnesota Vikings went in and did what many thought to be impossible. I will say, shout out to Miles coming through with that optimism, calling out for the Vikings to win last game, even though his heart wasn't really all the way in it. Shout out to Mel for calling us out on Twitter for the lack of optimism and hope that we were generating on the show. Shout out to Flip for always keeping that optimism up. I'm also going to pat myself on the back because I think I came the closest with the score prediction with the 24-21 Vikings victory. Yay me. But recap, break it down. JR, what are your thoughts? Vikings, Eagles, team coming out with the win. How you feeling?
A bit more encouraged than I was a couple weeks ago. I was really happy to see them get off to a fast start, even though Dan Bailey did miss the field goal early on. I was really happy to see the offense get off to a fast start, which is something that they really needed to do going into that game against the Eagles. We know the whole 38-7 mantra. I'm sure that was hanging over their heads, not only during practice, but walking into that stadium as well. So just to see them get off to that fast start was really encouraging. And they kept that offensive success throughout the entirety of the game. I thought they got a bit conservative in that fourth quarter, allowing it to come back and make the game very interesting. But Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs were their usual selves. What was really encouraging about Kirk Cousins was that he continued to be able to create off script and throw in the face of pressure, which is something we had our questions about on this podcast. And him being able to sustain that is still questionable to this point, but seeing him able to do that to this point is very encouraging for the offense. Does need to improve upon is, of course, the running game, but it did come alive down the backstretch in the fourth quarter. Latavius Murray stepped up and had, I believe it was 30-something yards down the backstretch in the fourth quarter, so that was very encouraging in order to ice the game. Offensive line still is a work in progress. Brian O'Neill continued to get his feet wet, which is great for Jason's brand and for him at right tackle. So he showed some really good signs as well. Rashai Hill held up pretty well for the most part at left. When Riley Reiff did go down with that foot injury. So there were some really encouraging signs from the offense. Now the defense, I thought they finally showed some glimpses of that team that we saw a year ago, Linval Joseph getting that touchdown off the fumble recovery. So Stephen Weatherly has been a pleasant surprise to this point in Everson Griffin's absence, and I think he's going to end up being a heavy contributor for this team if they do ever decide to part ways with Everson Griffin in the future years down the really nice guy in the seventh round is Stephen Weatherly, who's getting better every single game to this point. Mike Hughes, he was caught out of position a couple times. The Shelton Gibson long ball down the sideline and the Zach Ertz touchdown in the corner of the end zone. But the encouraging part about Mike Hughes is that he always seems to be in on the mix when he does get beat. He doesn't ever just get flat out beat for touchdowns or anything like that. So he always seems to be in the right spots, but it's just a matter of on the ball. That seems to be his biggest deficiency right now. Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks played much better, but overall I thought it was a really good defensive performance, and it's really encouraging to see them get back on track.
That's awesome. And Miles, obviously, I mean, the game is the game, but I guess how are you feeling generally speaking, not just about the game? I mean, obviously I think we all watched it probably more than once at this point. How do you feel about kind of the rest of season outlook and you know, where we should expect the team to end up overall, kind of coming off the heels of this win over Philadelphia?
I'm honestly not sure. I say that because, like, it's this team's so weird. Like, I the way they played against the Eagles, I think, is what we expected them to do. You know, how we expect them to play majority of the time. Their defense stepped up most of the night and played pretty well. They created turnovers. You know, they did all that, got pressure on the quarterback. But one thing I think that worries me is obviously the offensive line and some of the pressures and what Kirk Cousins got hit, what, like 10 times on Sunday? Like, that's too much if that's happening every week, which it's basically happening every week. And I know the Eagles game was one of the last games, I think, where we play like a dominant D-line. So being able to come away 2-2-1 after the first five games of the season, I think it's pretty good. I mean, obviously you'd like to be 3-2, but you know, 2-2-1, I think is pretty close to what a lot of people had this team at this point. You know, most people don't expect ties, but you know what I mean? Overall, I think they're playing well. I think they're finally getting back into their rhythm. I think Zimmer's decided he wants to change things up a little bit. And you saw that on Sunday. It wasn't just the same old, you know, defense that he's been running. I think he changed things up a little bit. he gave some different looks that we haven't seen at least this season, which was refreshing. Jayron Kearse has played really well in the big nickel role, which I think a lot of us are surprised at how well he's played at that position, but I'm here for it. But I think for me, the biggest two worries that have me pessimistic right now are the linebacker positions and the offensive line. You saw in the game on Sunday kind of people taking advantage a little bit of Anthony Barr, which they're going to do, and I get it because that's his worst asset is against the pass. But, like, what was it, Alshon Jeffrey, 3rd and 20, Anthony Barr let him clear right past him on a little – it was basically just like a clear route, like just over the linebacker, and he fit right over the linebacker right in front of the safety, which Harrison Smith came in and made arguably the play of the game where he knocked the ball out of Jeffrey's hands and it forced them into 4th and 20 instead of what probably would have been a first down and what could have been a touchdown drive, you know, in the fourth quarter, which was really big. I think that's my biggest worry on defense is the linebacker position. I just want to see how they can adjust to not putting Anthony Barr into positions where he's going to struggle. Obviously, it's not going to be – you can't hide everything, but I would just like to find some ways to hide that a little bit more. And then offensively, obviously the offensive line's the worry. You know, Riley Reiff's hurt. Rashad Hill came in and played pretty well at left tackle. JR mentioned Brian O'Neill at right tackle. Those guys have looked pretty good on Sunday, but to expect those guys to come in and play for a long period of time, you know, multiple games could be – a lot to ask of those guys right now, and that's where my biggest worry is. And can Mike Remmers step up at right guard? I think he played better on Sunday. I'm actually not worried about Tom Compton right now, which is kind of funny. Him or Pat Elflein. Pat Elflein's played pretty well from what I can recall his first two full games of the season. Obviously, there's times where he got worked by Fletcher Cox and Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh, but that's going to happen to a young guy like him. But overall, I think he's played pretty well and helped stabilize that interior of the offensive line. But like I said, I think those are probably one of my biggest two worries on both sides of the ball. And then special teams is probably the single biggest question mark on this team. Nowhere has that – they haven't looked good on any facet of special teams. I mean, kickoff doesn't even count anymore because for the most part you're getting touchbacks. But the punt team has looked god-awful. We haven't got – Every punt, I feel like they're going to get it blocked. The punt coverage has been okay. But overall, I'm just – and then obviously they've missed some kicks. And that's a big worry for me. Not the kicks so much. I'm fine with Dan Bailey, but the special teams overall has just been a worry of mine so far. So I'd like to see how they can what else they can do to help shore that up.
And Sexy Prince – you know, just kind of, you know, piggybacking off the question to Miles there, but obviously, you know, every week we get new power rankings and things of that sort. And, you know, there was obviously, because this is what happens when you put power rankings out, it's part of the reason people do power rankings. It's easy content that generates a lot of strong feelings. And, you know, Vikings fans really weren't feeling where power rankings were showing them to be right now. Yeah, I guess similar question to Miles. You know, Brian Fry put out something that said that, you know, the Vikings right now, based on his metrics, were trending to be an 800 team kind of by season's end. And then most kind of different ways that you look at the Vikings, if you look at them offensively, defensively for the season, don't have them looking particularly good. How have you reconciled, I guess, your thoughts of how good the Vikings were supposed to be based on kind of the personnel that they had heading into the season and what they've been season to date? And do you feel like, you know, Philly was the start of them turning the corner with some easy games now that we're really going to see that Vikings team that, that we were all expecting was going to come out the gates and, you know, beat teams like Buffalo that and beat them handily? Do you think Arizona is going to be kind of the start of that for us where we get in there and actually, you know, go in and blow out a team that we're supposed to?
Yeah, I do think that the Vikings are trending upward. I'm actually still surprised at how much people who say they don't care still pay attention to, you know, to the rankings. I really don't even click on those links unless someone will just like screenshot and show that, you know, the Vikings are like, you know, they're fifth and they're supposed to be third, or they're, you know, 10th and they're supposed to be seven or something. I think with those, it's kind of like you said, they're definitely clickbait. You can get people's feelings up in the air. And fans are obviously advocating for the Vikings to be higher than they actually are. And if you look at the Buffalo Bills, they're, I think the last time I saw them, they're like 30 or 31. So, I mean, like, I think it's clear that, you know, winning can help. But I think a lot of these rankings are still made off of precedent. You know, if a team drops, you know, a game, I think they somewhat look at it as like, okay, did they drop it because they were just like not clicking on all cylinders? So you can just chalk that up of like, hey, they were just having a bad game. Or, you know, is it a team that now we've seen a weakness exploited, and this is going to be a thing that's going to continue to get exploited throughout the season? I think with the Vikings, since last year playoffs, there's aspects of the Vikings defense that have been exploited, and I think they will continue to get exploited. But thankfully, like what Miles said, you're not really going to be facing those really tough defensive lines. You're not really going to be having to really go up against, like, you know, powerhouse secondaries that, you know, will really take away Diggs and Thielen. So I think for the most part, the Vikings are going to be able to, you know, put a string of games together where they're just winning. But I also think that that's probably going to, you know, fans are going to start to maybe overestimate how good the Vikings are right now. I still said week 10 will be the, you know, the week where we truly find out, is this team really capable of competing for a Super Bowl? Or, you know, are we going to have to be the team that, yeah, gets into the playoffs, but, you know, we'll probably get bounced out of the, you know, division round or again, another NFC championship. So I'm not really taking too much from those power rankings, but, you know, I know, like you said, I know that they're important for people who they like to see what the national media cares that feels about the Vikings.
Well, that's a good segue there in terms of kind of how guys on the team are playing. And because I'm not always a very nice person, I'm going to start you off on this one here. Your season to date, because, you know, we've been asking, and I'm looking for your now update on how you feel about Kirk Cousins and his performance season to date, because I'm not sure if you've seen, he's putting up numbers the likes of which we have never seen before. And five games in, best quarterback that many Vikings fans on Twitter have ever seen in their lifetime. Are you finally ready to put your skepticism on Kirk Cousins to bed, join the bandwagon, and follow Captain Kirk into battle forever?
No, I'm not. And I think part of it is like, I think we still have seen some of those areas in which we have, those of us who are skeptics, we're still seeing some of those areas where he's struggling in a little bit. Granted, we give him the fact that the offensive line is not what it should be or what it could be. And given the fact that I think Zimmer and DeFilippo are still maybe holding the offense back a little bit more so when they need to be maybe a little bit more aggressive, I don't put that on Kirk. He has played well. I have no problem saying that he's played well despite that. But I do still want to see him again later on in the season when, you know, maybe things are breaking down a little bit around him. Maybe he doesn't have a Thielen or a Diggs, and, you know, offensive line is playing even poorly. Like, I want to see Kirk elevate the players around him for me to, like, really feel like, okay, this could be the guy for the next, you know, 10 years or whatever the case is. But for right now, all I really can just say is like, yeah, I agree. He's playing well. But no, my skepticism is not gone.
Okay. JR, well, you are, you know, our resident QB here. What are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins? I know you've been a little more neutral on things. You've had some things that, you know, you felt like he did well. You obviously had some things you felt like you need to clean up on season to date, because it has been an up and down season coming out of this Eagles game. I guess, what are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins? And I guess, what are you thinking for him and his performance to date, and what you expect to see from him going forward?
I think he's played really well. He's been much better than I thought he would be. And we've seen how Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen have impacted quarterbacks in the past, but I didn't expect their chemistry to be this great.
so fast, and they're helping Kirk out a lot because their catch radius has really helped him a bunch because he's been facing so much pressure, and those guys are making some really good circus catches. But credit to Kirk Cousins, too. He's taking some risk and throwing those throws under pressure, some of them even blind, but he's had that trust to throw it up to those guys, and he's still spreading the wealth a little bit, too. We saw Laquon Treadwell getting the mix a little bit. He's starting to incorporate Kyle Rudolph a little bit more every single week. So he's just not throwing to those guys. He's spreading the wealth some too. And I think he's done a great job of maneuvering in the pocket and making some really good throws, but also being able to play off script and create pressure. And that's some of the questions that we had that Case Keenum was able to do last year. And if we were unsure, we were unsure if Kirk Cousins was going to be able to do that in John DeFilippo's offense. And he's been able to do that to this point. Now, is that sustainable? The jury is still out on that, but I'm excited to see how he builds on his performance thus far.
Awesome. And you brought us some really great points there because, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen. The volume stats that are being put up, in part because we can't run the ball at all. I think Next Gen Stats has us as the second worst run blocking team before contact, behind only the Tampa Bay Bucks or something like that. We've all but had to give up the running game. And so, across the board, be it wide receiver, tight end, quarterback, anyone involved in the passing game, the volume numbers are ridiculous because our entire passing game is predicated, our entire offense is predicated on the passing game because it's all we can do. I think Dalvin Cook is still our leading rusher with 99 yards and he hasn't played in a couple weeks. So, it's terrible. The running game is terrible. But the wide receivers, I don't think they're being lost in this. But, Miles, I want you to break down for us because, again, like JR said, we've now seen this three seasons in a row with three different quarterbacks. You come to Minnesota, you get to play with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, you have the best season of your career. Sam Bradford, Case Keenum, now Kirk Cousins. Can you break down for us what it is you're seeing that is just allowing them to really elevate the play of really any quarterback that we put behind center that gets to play with them?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, they're route running. I think that's the number one. Like those guys, just they're some of the best route runners in the league. Number two, I would say is their ability to make contested catches is has been some of the best we've seen in the league as well. So like when you combine route running with being able to make contested catches, it allows quarterbacks to throw the ball in your vicinity and to make it work, right? So, you know, we've seen Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs both make crazy, crazy catches that, you know, you don't see a lot of players make. And the quarterback's just learning to trust those guys to go up and make a play. So they're willing to take more opportunities and take more chances for it. So I'd say those are probably the biggest aspects of it. And then you factor into it the offensive coordinators that the teams have had the last two plus seasons in Pat Shurmur and John DeFilippo. Those guys have done a really great job of scheming to their quarterback and their receiver's strengths. You know, moving Adam Thielen into the slot, getting him mismatches against linebackers and safeties, along with nickel corners. Moving Diggs around all over the formation and letting him find ways to get open downfield, using him in the screen game, in reverses, using him as a gadget player in a sense too. Like there's so many different things that they're doing with these guys that are so creative that it allows them to get open and be focal points. So I think that those are the biggest points. I'd say, yes, Kirk Cousins and – or not Kirk Cousins, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are big parts of it. Obviously, they're the biggest parts of it. But I'd say the offensive coordinators that they've had have played a big part of helping those guys to scheme to those guys' strengths and to make sure that – you know, they're the focal point of the offense because of the two best players on this offense, and I don't think it's close. We know Dalvin Cook's dynamic, but they've played a lot of games without him the last two seasons, so I think they've gotten accustomed to not being with him. So I wouldn't put him in that category yet just because we haven't seen him healthy. So I'd say, yeah, they're by far the two best players on this offense. So they're going to – offensive coordinators are doing that, doing the ability of creating for those guys, and I think it's worked out tremendously.
I must agree. And I guess we can flip it in. We'll talk about this game that we have upcoming here, because we talked a lot about a lot of things, but obviously we got to preview the upcoming game here. And we got Kirk Cousins, and we just finished talking about at least on one side of the ball, actually one group on one side of the ball. So the wide receivers, the receiving position overall, even the tight ends, a lot of weapons, a lot of people to throw the ball to. JR, take us to the other side where we got, Josh Rosen coming in as a rookie. I know this was your QB1, your guy. How has he looked so far, and who's he throwing the ball to? Because Larry Fitzgerald has not been doing anything for the fantasy team that I have him on. So, yeah.
He's actually been playing pretty good for the most part. He just doesn't have any help, especially up front. The offensive line is really bad. Mikey Potty, they brought him over as a huge free agent signing, but he just hasn't been playing well. Justin Pugh's been okay. And they have Andre Smith and DJ Humphries protecting the edges. Both of those guys really haven't played well. Mason Cole is the center, who's a rookie. He hasn't played very well either. So those guys are really struggling up front right now. And then they have an offensive coordinator that's just struggling to be creative. And their most dynamic player is David Johnson, who they just signed to a huge long-term extension. I believe it was like a 3-year, $40 million deal or something like that. So they haven't been incorporating him much in the offense, and they're just struggling with making him that dynamic centerpiece, and they're just running him up the middle. And if you go back and watch them against the Rams, that's all they were doing, just trying to force feed him up the middle. And of course, the Rams have Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh up the middle, so a lot of his runs were just getting stuffed. They didn't use him out wide or in the slot or anything. And I used to love how Bruce Arians used him all over the field with Carson Palmer, and that we were just seeing exactly how he should be used in a similar way that Sean McVay used Todd Gurley. He doesn't just use him in the backfield. He uses him in the slot. He spreads him out wide on the perimeter. Receiver from time to time, whether or actually pushing the ball to him in the spot. So that's something that you want to see with David Johnson. Now, they did a better job of it last week against the 49ers. Well, I'm not sure that he did have, but he had a pretty good game for the most part. So it's going to be – you have the he's throwing to Christian Kirk. Receiver, he's been explosive. He's had a couple explosive shielded in the slot behind Larry Fitzgerald, so he hasn't put up a lot of. Also, Ricky Seal Jones, he's a decent tight end for them, so he doesn't have a lot of receivers that he's thrown to right now, and that's something that they're going to have to improve over the years through the draft. So the offense is really struggling, but their defense has surprisingly played well. Chandler Jones, we know he's one of the best defensive ends in the NFL, so it'll be interesting to see exactly who does start at left tackle for the Vikings. Rather than Riley Reiff, they're going to have some way with attached tight end sets and running back just to slow down Chandler Jones playing at his normal high level. And they have a couple guys on the trading block right now, and Hassan Reddick and Deion Buchanan, who just their scheme. But something I'm really going to be watching is Steve Wilks normally plays a lot of zone, but it's going to be interesting to see exactly who Patrick Peterson shadows, whether it's Adam Thielen or Stephon Diggs. And it's kind of pick your poison. And whoever he does end up shadowing, I think they're going to force feed the other guy he's not shadowing. So that's something that I'll be having my eyes on.
All right. Thank you, sir. There was a little piece there where you were breaking up, but just, in case the listeners just missed it, JR kind of broke it down for us here. Josh Rosen has no help whatsoever. Offensive line might actually be worse than the Vikings, and he's throwing to a rookie. Is Ricky Seals Jones a second-year player? How long has he been in the
league? Second year, I believe it is. Yeah, he was a wide receiver at Texas A&M.
Yeah, second-year player who's, coming into his own as a receiving tight end, but, kind of a one-dimensional player. Fitz been injured, not doing too much. Basically, Josh Rosen is playing well, has no help whatsoever. So this is one where, on paper, it looks like it should be a get-right game for the defense. Miles, not sure if you've looked at the betting line, but right now, Minnesota is the biggest betting favorite on the week. We, reminiscent of, the week we don't talk about anymore. Is Minnesota going to cover in this game? And from your perspective, what are the keys to victory? What do they need to do to go in, handle this business, and get out with the big win that the Vegas line is saying that we should be getting. 2-score win.
Yeah. Well, yeah, 2 scores, but isn't it like 10 and a half?
I think the last I looked was at 10.
Okay. I'd say the biggest things they need to do is stop David Johnson on defense. And we know that to date, this so far this season, he hasn't really been utilized the way he should. But I think, you know, it could happen anytime where they try to mix it up and try to put him out in space the way they used to. So I'd say you stop him first and foremost. Don't give up any big plays, because I think that's really hurt this defense. And then on offense, I think, obviously, we've talked about establishing the run. I think if they can do that, it sounds like Dalvin Cook should be back. So hopefully that helps. But just starting to establish the run a little bit, just so that it doesn't need to all fall on Kirk Cousins, because him taking all those hits isn't something you want to do every week. But then, obviously, like we said, there has been a lack of explosive plays by the offense per week. So I think getting a few explosive plays on offense and getting the run game going would be my keys to the victory. I do think that they'll cover. I think they'll win pretty handily this week. I just think it's a different week than it was during the week we shall not mention, and I think that's a big part of it. So.
Okay, I like it. I like it. I like it. Saxy Prince, from your perspective, I guess any keys, specifically from a defensive standpoint, what are you hoping to see in this game? So I know Miles going to call out, you know, what he wants to see on offense, getting the run game going, et cetera. But what do you want to see from the defense to help you, I guess, believe that, you know, things are really and truly back, you know, where they're supposed to be, and that, you know, again, this is the beginning of the Viking season that we expected to see from week one.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about this guy a little bit more so, but I do feel like he hasn't had the games that we've kind of known him to have. Xavier Rhodes has disappeared just a little bit, and I think for me defensively, if I really want to see this Vikings get back on track, I want to see Xavier Rhodes really just make it really, really hard for Rosen in this game.
Alshon had 2 catches for like 39 yards last week.
Yeah, but I mean, even so, that's one game. I mean, there have been plenty of games where he has gotten burned. I mean, he got burned in the Buffalo game. So, I mean, I do want to see him show his dominance a little bit more so. And that's actually a guy that I'm going to be paying attention to this week. And I think he's going to be really important to just like a really great defensive outing. Offensively, it's a lather, rinse, repeat type thing. Just keep feeding Stephon Diggs. Get him the ball early and often, and then just watch as the offense is able to spread out like it was last week. So I think it'll be another really good game for the Vikings.
How are you not going to mention Adam Thielen?
Who?
Adam Thielen, the wide receiver who set the NFL record for consecutive games over 100 yards to start the season. I mean, the man is balling, so I feel like you'd be remiss in not bringing him up. Yes, getting Diggs involved is important. Get it, because as Miles said, those are really the two key playmakers. But I mean, you can't really mention one without the other.
Hey, but that's kind of what I'm getting at. Is I think because of either the complexity that Stephon Diggs has within the offense, and then also the fact that you know, teams are keen. They're keen on both, but I think they are keen a little bit more so on Diggs. It does really allow Adam Thielen to, again, make more plays down the field. He's killing it from the slot. So they definitely complement each other. And I'm not purposely trying to leave Adam Thielen out because he is balling.
I'm just saying you left him out, though. So, you know.
Well, here's my question for the Arizona Cardinals defense. I know to start the season, they had mentioned that Patrick Peterson might not be shadowing the way he used to. Can we confirm that? JR, do you know, has he been shadowing? No, I don't know.
Not from what I've seen.
So I don't think he has been.
If he's not, then I think, because I was gonna say who does he shadow at that point, right? Because both guys have been balling. That to me would say a lot, and then you'd obviously take advantage of whoever he's not shadowing. But if he's not shadowing anybody, then I would just put both those guys on the other side of the field and let Patrick Peterson stay on the other side. But
yeah, I mean, last time they played, I believe it was, but that's a totally different scheme. Steve Wilks is all about playing a lot of zone.
Yeah,
so
right.
I don't know. We'll see.
All right. All right. Well, let's keep this thing moving along here. Saxy Prince, what's your bold prediction? What's your score prediction? How's this thing going to go?
As far as score prediction, I have the Vikings winning 35-13. Like I said, I think it's going to be handled very, very well. And bold prediction, Kirk Cousins throws 5 touchdowns.
Oh, boy. All right. After he throws 5 touchdowns, will you join the bandwagon?
No, because even Kirk Cousins doesn't believe in blind teams.
I had to try. JR, score prediction, bowl prediction.
I got it. Vikings 27-13. Bowl prediction. Let's say Vikings get 5 turnovers.
Woo!
That's not enough points, then.
I didn't say they were gonna score off all the turnovers.
You're right. Okay.
All right, Miles.
I'm gonna go 30-17 Vikings. I just think there might be some garbage points scored at the end there for Arizona. And then I will say, bold prediction, I think Dalvin Cook scores 3 touchdowns.
Whoa.
A rushing touchdown. Wow.
Ooh. I didn't say rushing. No, but he'll probably have like 1 or 2.
Miles, you're messing with me now because, I got Dalvin on the bench right now.
I wouldn't start him until you see him do something. But it's got to be a bold prediction, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. But if it came through, I'd be so mad. All right. I'm going to go Vikings 28, Cardinals 17. And, it's got to happen at some point. I mean, this was, the man, the myth, the legend, the greatest safety in the history of safeties. At some point, I'm going to need him to have that game where he really, really, really shows out. I feel like this is going to be the game. Harrison Smith is going to bait Josh Rosen into some picks. So I'm going to go Harrison Smith's getting 2 picks. He's getting a sack and a couple tackles for loss. But really, it's about the, picking off Rosen a couple times, getting some sacks in this game. And it's got to happen. At some point, Harrison's got to do this for me. Need him to come back, ball out. Well, we made it. Gentlemen, we made it. JR, anything we should be looking out for you? Any new stuff?
No, just going to 2009.
All right, so JR is already in draft mode. Miles is 6, so I'm going to leave you alone. Saxy Prince, other than Football Machine, anything else we should be looking for? Preview, grand opening for the film. Has that happened yet? Tickets still available?
Yes, tickets are still available. Please go and purchase. I mean, you can always purchase them at the day of as well. Price just goes up a little bit more so. But I would love for as many and anyone who would love wants to support, love to have them come out. I think it'll be fantastic. A lot of hardworking people worked on this project.
And what are the details? What are the particulars? Date, time, place, all that kind of stuff.
November 2nd, 8 to 10 p.m. We'll probably have some kind of Q&A, just maybe have some conversations and stuff. I believe it's in Golden Valley, so not too far away, but if you need some carpools, all that stuff, you could probably arrange it with other Vikings fans and stuff. But it's gonna be great. It's gonna be fantastic. I haven't decided if I'm actually going to watch it the second time because I watched it the first time and it was, it's as an artist, you always are critiquing yourself.
How weird is that? Because I know when I listen to the show, like to edit it, it's weird listening to us talk. But like, how is it for you? Like seeing yourself, I guess it's probably weird enough on like a phone or your TV screen, but like on a big screen, seeing yourself up there, like how does that feel for you when you see yourself up there like that?
It's weird. I don't know if I'll ever get used to it, but because like you again, as an artist, you're always critiquing yourself. So then when you deliver a line, you're just like, man, I should have did this, or I should have, you know, probably implored more of this technique, or I should have, you know, took it a little bit further, or more emotional preparation. Like, you're thinking through all those things as you're watching it, but then you also have to, like, resolve within yourself, like, it's already done. You can't change anything that's on that screen right now. So you just have to accept this is what it is, and this is how you can help yourself become better and stuff.
Yeah, for the next one, you just need to let us focus group the stuff for you. Let us do a screening. We'll do a screening beforehand just to let you know what it really is.
Right.
Well, all right. That's it. That's all. Listeners, thank you for sticking with us. As always, this is the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Brown, joined by JR, Sick Miles, and Mega Man Saxy Prince. And yeah, we will talk to you guys again soon. Have a good one.